Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of MixSurgery.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And today, coming to you from a different piece of software. I'm actually using Google Hangouts Live via YouTube, something or other. I hate the namings that Google gives all its products, but I had to use Google instead of my usual Skype because Skype is down today. They've got apparently an international outage. And so I'm going to try to do this and get to show my guests like this and get to show myself like that. And I've got actually more power within the interview, but I also have to remember to use it. In the past, I've actually had the camera on my guest because I was focused on my guest and I was talking and didn't realize the audience couldn't even see me or vice versa. Anyway, enough about the software. I want to introduce you to today's guest, which means I have to click her face. There she is. Gunaz Kusayinova. How did I do with the pronunciation of your name?
Well, you actually did quite well.
You should say it, because just like I listen to old videos of you to try to pronounce your name right, I know someone's going to listen to this video in preparation for a meeting with you of some kind. They should know how you pronounce your name.
Yeah, well, I've got a really tricky name to pronounce. So my name is Gulnaz, and my surname is Kusayinova. So, yeah, I've been struggling all my life with it.
And you're the founder of Easy Size. Let me see if I've got the explanation right of Easy Size. You know how you go to a store and you buy a shirt or pants or dress for yourself, and you know you're usually a size, say, small, and so you order a size small and you get it home, and it turns out it's not the right fit. Maybe it's too big or maybe it's too small because there's no international convention about what size small means. And so what do? You end up returning the product back to the store. And the store ends up having a lot of expenses related to people getting the wrong sizes, never mind the frustration that a customer has when they're planning to get one size and they get the other. So that's where Easy Size comes in. What Easy Size does is it makes it easy for customers to know what the right size is, even if they've never bought from a store before and never got to try it on. And that's Gulnaz's business. Am I right?
Yeah. You actually explained it quite well.
Cool. And you know what? It just reminded me, I should actually make sure we are on, there it is, the Rode Podcaster instead of the built-in speaker. I should, this is new for me. Am I sounding better to you right now?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Oh, good. All right. I think I was using the wrong microphone a moment ago. If I had an editor, all this stuff would be edited out and I'd be sounding polished. But instead, everyone's getting to hear all the tech issues that I have as I do this interview. But here's where I'm not going to have any tech issues with my sponsor. My two sponsors are HostGator. Later on, I'll tell you why. If you need a hosting company for your website, you've got to check out HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. And my second sponsor is TopTal. Later on, I'll tell you why. If you need a developer, you should go to TopTal.com. TopTal.com/Mixergy. So Gulnaz, here's the way I understand your story. You grew up in Moscow, right?
Yeah, I was born and spent first 22, 23 years of my life in Moscow.
And as someone growing up in Russia, you didn't have a sense that you should be an entrepreneur or the possibilities of entrepreneurship until you discovered a book in your dad's library. What was the book?
Yeah, the book, which basically changed my life, It was written by Dr. Philip Kotler, and it's called Marketing Management. Mm-hmm. So the book was actually quite old. I think even at the moment when I was reading it, it was already published 10 years ago or so. And basically what Dr. Philip Kotler was doing in the book, he was using examples of all the international successful companies and explaining some different marketing approaches those companies have used when they were launching their products and so on.
This book, right? One of these books?
No, it's actually Philip Kotler.
Oh, Philip Kotler. Okay.
Yeah. So his books at some point, they were recognized as like must read. Yeah, this is him. Yeah.
This does not look like one of the most inspiring books. Look at the cover of that book.
Well, I had a different cover. It was just a plain black cover.
How to create, win, and dominate markets. What was it about this book that was so exciting for you?
Well, this is one of the books. What was really great that he will explain all the basic marketing things using examples of successful companies. Like, for instance, he will said This is how Henry Ford found his first customers, or this is how Coca-Cola decided to use that ad instead of different ad campaign, and so on. So what I really liked about that there were companies I knew, and I could definitely relate. So I've used their products every day. And for me, it was just an amazing idea saying like, oh my God, those big companies, they started one day from a small idea, from one person's passion. And that's something that really made me think like, okay, maybe I can do that one day too.
I had similar experience. I used to go to the Hillcrest Library in Queens, New York, and I'd pick up a bunch of business books and realize all these things that seem so big and so amazing were just started by some dude or some woman somewhere. And they often had nothing going for them but an idea, and then they developed it, and I started learning from them and getting just as motivated. Now, for me, I was living in New York where people kind of encourage you to be into business. What was it like for you in Russia, having an idea that you wanted to be an entrepreneur just like these people you were reading about?
Well, I was born in 1989, so right before the crash of the Soviet Union. And of course, at that time, the only thing people were looking for was stability. So mm-hmm. I would quite often hear from my parents something like, okay, the worst thing you can do with your life is to be a singer or like a model, so like work in show business, or to have your own company.
So, that's the worst thing you could be, either a singer or have your own company an entrepreneur. They lump them together.
Well, because Panama was something that it's a place where you won't see a regular monthly check coming to you. It's a place where you don't know whether you have a job tomorrow or not. And of course, they were really, really looking for some stable place for work. So they would encourage me to actually think about either working in finance and banking. Mm-hmm. I actually quite don't know why, because that's for me is like the most unstable economy now there. But yeah, for some reason, they really like that. Or they would say, okay, you should work for government because government will exist all the time. And it means that you will always have your salary and everything will be okay. So, and I would also say that I think even when I was already started my first company when I was 19, starting a startup and having a startup was still a bizarre idea. So we didn't really have any places where you could go and, talk to people, some sort of, hackathons or workshops and so on. It was really, really new for Moscow. So there will be maybe like one workshop a month somewhere in Moscow. So, of course, now it's getting much better. So if you want to start a business, you will definitely find the right advice and the right people. But at that time, it was still quite new.
Is there actually a startup community in Moscow right now? And by the way, can you tilt your camera up? I think we're cutting off the top of your head.
Yeah, sure.
There we go. Yeah. Is there a startup community now in Moscow?
Yeah, there is definitely. And I think it's getting a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Of course, the trends I've seen at the moment when I was living there, so like 2 years ago, I could see a lot of companies not trying to invent something, but sort of copy successful stories and successful companies from the US or Europe. So it will be more or less something similar probably to what's happening now in China. Mm-hmm. There will be a lot of copycats. But in a way, it was growing quite well. There will be some international conferences with great speakers. Of course, after all the political situation now in Moscow, I'm not quite sure what's happening there. I do see that a lot of startups now, they have to live in Moscow and they have to work and be focused only on the local market, because for them it's insanely hard to actually go international or even to go to the European market. So
it's so hard to go international.
Well, I would say that because of some sanctions, some certain economic verticals might be hard to get in. And I guess also what works against them is that a lot of international investors, they don't want to invest in Russian companies because they don't think that it's going to be stable and it's going to, survive sometimes and so on. So I think it's getting a little bit harder. But on the other hand, it seems that now there are new ways to do things. So there are a lot of Russian companies focusing on only in the Russian market and doing great things.
Okay. And then there was this incident at a Christmas party where you ordered a dress that you thought was amazing and something happened. What was that?
Yeah, well, that's a story of my life. I think it happened to me a few times, but this one was the most painful one. So we had a corporate Christmas party. And at that time, I was working in one of the largest banks in Russia, and I was the youngest head of unit there. So it was quite important party for me, I would say. So I've ordered, I picked this amazing dress and I've ordered it. And it was supposed to be delivered a few days before the party, but it got stuck somewhere in customs. So I got it right like 1 day before the party. I put it on and I just realized that it's the wrong size. Like it just did not fit. So I started panicking like, okay, there's no way I'm going to fix this dress. So I have to run to close my store and buy a new one. But it was a really, really stressful experience for me. And that was, I guess, one of the one more moments when I was like, okay, there has to be something, you know, which will be able to solve this problem.
And that's what led you to start your company. And I understand the name of the company, Easy Size, right? You just want to make it easy for people to find the right size. The first version, though, wasn't exactly the right version. What you did was you asked people to take photos of themselves.
Yeah, that's correct.
What was wrong with that?
Well, I would say, first of all, we didn't realize that this topic is really, really difficult topic to talk about for people. So they find it intimidating. And they don't want to share their sizes, as well as they don't want to sometimes to tell truth about what their measurements and what they were. So that was one obstacle. And another problem is that we've noticed that, frankly, honest users are quite lazy. They don't want to do anything extra. They want to just, you know, click once and that's it. Get the size, get it delivered, no hassle, no work at all. So that's
what kind of work were you asking someone to do? You were asking them to go to a store, find a dress that they wanted, and then take a picture of themselves and send it into the store?
No, we will ask them, first of all, to download the app and in the app to make two photos of themselves. And we will recognize their measurements and sort of based on that, make a prediction what size they need to pick.
You could figure that out based on a photo of somebody?
Well, we use some image recognition technologies available at that time, and we will be able to recognize your measurements, like saying, okay, this is your bust, like hips and waist and so on. So, which, again, it sounds quite simple to do, but we've noticed that there'll be a huge drop in customers' usage, like, and they just won't be doing that because it's just too much hassle.
Let me ask you this, before we move on to what you did next that did work. Who wrote software that can actually figure out where someone's butt is? Is that you guys wrote it?
Well, yeah, we used at that point, I had a developer and he prepared this, you know, algorithm, which will be able to recognize that. I had to admit though, that it wasn't super, super precise and accurate. So of course there will be, depending on the angle of the camera or depending on the lighting in the room and so on. And or, for example, if you're wearing baggy clothes, that could be some, you know, problems with that.
Okay. So this was just a starting point to see if it made sense. And it's a good thing you didn't develop it far enough that it could actually tell where someone's butt is and where their waist is perfectly because people weren't into it. And so instead,
Indeed. And I think what was really great when we did that, we realized that people do have this issue. So we didn't have problems with downloads. What we had problems with, it was actually usage of the app. So we realized, okay, people are willing to do something with there. We just need to find a better way.
How did you get people to download this app that would require them to do one more thing to find the right outfit? Most people don't want to download any outfit app. I know I don't. Look at me.
Well, I think you look perfect, actually.
Thank you.
I think the jacket fits you really well.
You know, the jacket looks so much better in person, but because I've got lighting that's not showing off even the flaps, it looks like one big chunk of black on me.
Well, still it seems that it fits you quite well.
But you know what's nice about this? It dresses up the t-shirt. This is all I would be wearing in the office. I think just wearing a t-shirt to an interview makes me look like I don't care enough. So I throw on a sports jacket and hopefully it looks like I care just a little bit more.
Okay, so, now I feel bad about my dark sweater.
No, you look good on camera. I'm the one who's working on it still. Okay.
Yeah.
So then how did you get people to download the app?
So we had a couple of articles about the app, and basically that we didn't really spend that much money on any advertising. For us, it was important just to get the first bunch of users to use that and see how they will be using that.
I see. So we're not talking about massive adoption. We're just talking about enough people to get a sense that this app is something people want, but the implementation of that is not working out. And so then you went out to the street and you did
Yes, yes.
This is my favorite story of yours.
Yeah, well, after that, we started analyzing the results. And it was clear, okay, it's a problem. There is a problem for people. They want to try to solve that. But we have to find the right way to do that. So we started thinking about what else we can ask customers to add. And we quickly realized that one of the things that everyone knows usually is the size of things they wear, of clothes they wear. So we decided to test this assumption. So we bought the tickets and we went for a weekend to Malmo, which is a Swedish city, 20 minutes by train from Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And we had a camera and we were staying on streets and taking photos of people. So of course, we knew that it will look quite creepy. You know, I'm just coming to you and saying, like, hey, can I take a photo of you? Like, no, why would you do that? So I had this legend saying, like, hey, I'm a fashion blogger. I'm traveling the world, and I really like how you look. Can I take a photo of you? People won't have problems. So we didn't really have anyone saying, like, no, I don't want that. Everyone will be like, yeah, sure. Wow. Should I pose? Where should I stand? So we'll take a photo, and after I'll ask, could you please tell me the brands you are wearing? So again, that won't be a problem. They'll say, okay, I'm wearing a H&M jacket and Calvin Klein jeans and so on. But when I ask them about sizes, no one will be really comfortable with sharing that. They'll be like, oh my God, I don't remember. And it's actually my boyfriend's jacket. I would even say, hey, I can literally check it right now. I can just check the label on your jacket and write the size down. Is that okay with you? But people won't really like that. So after spending a day there, it was again clear, okay, there is something that we can know about customers, sizes, and brands, but there is not something that customers want to share with us. So I guess that's when we realized and started asking ourselves, like, okay, who else have that data? And that's obviously online shops.
Online shops already had that data. So if you partner with them, you can get that data. All right.
Exactly, exactly. And online shops, they don't have these, you know, feelings we can hurt by asking uncomfortable questions.
I love that you are able to actually get them to answer questions just by saying you're a blogger. There's something amazing about saying you're a blogger, or in my case, an interviewer. I can ask the jerkiest questions and people will just open up because I'm doing an interview.
Yeah,
if I was just a guy on the street asking this stuff, forget it.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with, like, you know, our egos, and everyone wants to be like, oh, okay, there's a blogger who wants to make the, you know, a blog post about me or something.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're just walking around on the street asking questions, and I'm just here asking my own questions using nothing but Google, YouTube, Hangout Plus, whatever they're calling it right now. Actually, you know what they're calling it? This is YouTube's Live. That's their product. And YouTube Live allows me to instantly record as soon as I connect to you, even though we're not broadcasting live to anybody else. And the reason that I say it's got confusing name is because if I want to include somebody else in here, I think they still, on the invite page, say that it's a Google Hangout Plus. So I make fun of it, but the truth is it actually works pretty well. It takes me a little while to remember to click your face and click my face and to do the work. And I know that I can just let the software do it, but if I do, the software kind of gives everyone whiplash. As soon as you say, yeah, the camera goes to you.
It's actually also the funny thing they have. You can adjust and put some filters, like, you know, enhance the image so it looks prettier and so.
Yeah. You know what, actually, maybe they've improved it. Maybe now I don't need to click on your face. Oh, there, it pops over to you and then pops to me. Maybe let me try that. Actually, before I do, I've got to talk about my sponsor, and my sponsor is a company called HostGator. You've heard me talk about them for a long time. Let me click to make sure you guys can see them. I think this is actually going to work where you can see their website. This is HostGator, the site you all know. Let me show you a part of HostGator that you may not be aware of, because it's just this, like, one little hyperlink on the top left of the screen that says WordPress hosting. What do you get when you do WordPress hosting? Oh, wait, actually, they just updated their site. Look at that. It's actually even now on their homepage. This must be doing so well that they're promoting it. Anyway, wherever you see it, WordPress hosting means that you're going to get them to host your WordPress site in a way that makes sure that there are no more viruses, no more issues as you use WordPress. And WordPress actually, frankly, has a lot of problems, a lot of issues where somebody's going to hijack your site. This just happened recently. Or inject it with malware. Or steal your customers' data. This happens all the time. That's why you hire someone to manage your site. Or you just go to HostGator and they'll manage your site for you. They'll make sure your plugins aren't going to break things down. They're going to make sure your site is up, even if you get a lot of traffic. Here, this is the link right here. They even protect you from malware. They'll give you your email accounts. They'll do the whole thing. They even will migrate you from what other piece of garbage hosting company you're probably with right now. and their prices are really reasonable. In fact, so reasonable that they can't give me a discount, can't give my audience a discount if you mention Mixergy. So we're just going to go on the honor system. If you heard it on Mixergy, please, when you check out, tell them that you heard it on Mixergy. But wait, here's something else that I want to show you. Where is that? Max size, unlimited. Ah, here. You even get Google AdWords credit of $100. So if you want to just get started with a WordPress site, just go to HostGator. You're going to get inexpensive prices plus $100 in AdWords credit. Everything you need, unmetered space, unlimited email, protection, the works, and customer service that's so good that I actually had this guy I used to do business with email me and say, is HostGator really everything you say it is in the interviews? I said, yeah, absolutely. So he tried it out and he had trouble with it. And so what he did was this guy named Eric just called up customer support at HostGator and they walked him through the whole process and he said he couldn't believe it. And then he said he got home and he realized the problem. The problem why he couldn't sign up with HostGator was he was on a hotel internet, and they blocked out other sites like HostGator, and so he couldn't use it. So it was his own fault for not noticing that that's what's going on, and HostGator was still there for him with tech support, and they helped him get started with his website. Now he says he doesn't know why he waited for so long to get a WordPress site. So if you're waiting for a long time, stop waiting. They'll be there for you. And if you already have one and you're not happy with your hosting company, they will migrate for you. 100% free migration. I paid hundreds of dollars to migrate my site. You don't have to do it. Go to HostGator.com and select Managed WordPress Hosting. They're going to manage your WordPress site so you don't have any of those headaches that other people have. And I'm grateful to them for sponsoring Mixergy. All right. So now we are at a place where you figured out the problem, but you haven't yet figured out the solution. You know two ways that aren't going to work. You can't have people take photos of themselves. That's one more step that they're willing to take. You can't ask them on the street for information so you could create your own database. They're not going to give you information about their sizes, even though they'll give you everything else about them. And so you decided, let's try going to companies, to retailers that already have this information. How do you get through to a retailer? You don't have any experience there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, to be honest, in the beginning, when I just came up with this idea, I used my personal relationship. So a friend of mine, he was working in a fashion company back in Moscow. So at that time, I was already I was living in Copenhagen, but he was back in Moscow. So I just gave him a call and said, hey, and he was an IT guy, you know, like this IT guy who we call like solving all the issues they had. So the fashion company, they had three mono brands. Sports brands for female and male users. So I just gave him a call and asked him, hey, what sort of data do you usually have from customers? Do you ask them about like do you have an ID of clothes or any sort of like type information or fabric and anything like that? He said, well, let me check that out. And half an hour later, he sent me that data. And so it was the data for previous 6 months for all these three brands. And that was the first data we've got to actually play with. So it gave us a really good understanding of like what sort of data usually online shops have. So we realized that, okay, of course they have the most valuable data, which is personal data of the customers and payment information, but it's not something that we really need. What we really need is to see orders grouped by IDs of customers. So we want to see that you made a purchase this month and 3 months ago and 1 year later, 1 year ago and so on. So
how do you tie all that data back so that you know whether the size is right or not?
Well, at the beginning, we just tried to check and they actually were quite lucky because they were analyzing the reasons of returns. So people will mark down and say like, hey, the size wasn't right or the fit wasn't right and so on. That sort of helped. Like the first batch of the data helped us to understand the format of the data we need to aim for and what sort of information we can request from shops. Of course, later, half a year later, we've got the real data, historical data from a real online shop, and they were actually running quite a big online shop, and they had around 100 brands. Mm-hmm. So, and that was our first data we could really run the algorithm through and see whether the algorithm is working or not. And again, we use the same approach saying like, okay, if something is not returned, then we'll assume that everything is okay. And if it's returned, that something was wrong there in 90% of cases, that would be the size. So, yeah.
I see. Now, in order to start doing all this, you need some funding, right?
Well, I've been bootstrapping for almost a year and a half. before we got any funding. So we've been lucky to get selected to start a bootcamp acceleration program. So for first 3 months, we got some money from them and the office space and a lot of mentorship and help. And actually after that, for the next year and a half, we've been sitting for free in their office. So that was quite good. Of course, also they'll have a lot of events and free coffee. So it really helps when you run a startup. Prior to my company, to EasySize, I actually worked for almost 6 or 7 years in IT and marketing. And before that, my last corporate job was in one of the largest banks in Russia. Mm-hmm. So I had a really, really well-paid job. So I had a lot of savings, which I basically used all of my savings during those year and a half of bootstrapping.
What's the story of you going to an investor who starts asking you all these IT questions and you have to admit that you don't have the answers to those questions?
Well, working in the Russian bank, I was actually playing a lot with data. So my unit was it was called strategic planning unit. So what we will do, we will have on one hand the behavioral data from millions of users. So like if you have ever been somehow connected or related to an online our bank, we will have the information about you, and based on that, we'll try to analyze that and sort of offer you some tailored products. So that experience gave me an understanding how we can work with data. So the first prototype, the algorithm we had, it was written by me. It was prepared, the specifications were done by me, and after I had some help from my developers to do that. But I agree with you, of course, like every time, even now when I go to investors, I'm a sole founder and I'm not a technical founder. I will receive all the questions, like all the technical questions. Usually it will be something like, it will start like, who is your IT guy? Who is doing all the tech?
No, what I mean is that I have here in my notes a story about you and I can't for the life of me find it. I don't know why, but maybe it's because I'm paying attention to the conversation while I'm searching. But the story is that you went to an investor and you asked for funding. The investor asked you questions. You didn't have the answers and you just went back to work. And not only did you start to know more about the industry, but then you also built a working prototype and you had customers and the person was just amazed. Maybe this is by someone, maybe this is someone who already funded you, right? Does any of this sound familiar?
Yeah.
I'm about to hunting my notes.
Yeah. That was actually my first company, not EasySize. That was my first company.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I found it when I was 19 and I had zero understanding and knowledge about how startups work. I've never read a book about startups in my life. I just had this dream to sort of like, you know, I had a dream to change the restaurant business in Moscow. So I found an angel investor. To be honest, even now today, I have no idea why the hell he even invested in my company, because if I was an investor, I will not invest. I was a sole founder with no experience in the industry, with no experience in IT or whatsoever. I worked before with IT projects, but nothing more. And I didn't have a team. So when I met him for the first time, he really liked the idea. And that was an idea to optimize a restaurant business by analyzing their bookings data. He was like, that's a great idea, but I cannot invest. You have nothing. So I said, okay, give me some time. So I got back to him a few weeks later and I said, okay, this is the, like, I made the simple prototype. Actually, I even remember that I made it on Keynote. So I made the interface on Keynote and I added some animation. So when I showed him, he's like, where is it? Did you actually build the prototype? I was like, no, it's actually just presentation. But so he was quite amazed by the progress we've got. And I also got meetings with all the top owners of restaurants and the best restaurant chain, the biggest one. So I think that persistence he really liked. And that was the reason why he decided to invest.
That's the story. That was amazing, actually, that you were able to turn him around so much. And I think tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like that's why he invested, right? That you were able to do that. So is this the company called YouReserve?
Yeah, exactly. That was the company.
So I went on that website and now YouReserve, the website says, from event websites, registration, badges, site check-in and surveys and much more, you help event organizers. So it's more of an event site now, right?
I think the domain expired a few years ago, so someone else bought it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. The company itself existed for maybe like 9 months only or so. So we made the first prototype, and when we went to test it with restaurant owners, they liked it. They liked it a lot, but they didn't have money to pay for it. For them, it wasn't the main priority. So we ended up just shutting down the company and selling the prototype to one of the chains, restaurant chains, to sort of at least refund a little bit of money to our investors.
And then what did you end up doing after that and before Easy Size?
Well, after that, I had one more online shop, which I founded with two of my friends. And that was my experience in e-commerce, because I really wanted to be hands-on on this interesting thing called e-commerce at that time. And between my startups, I was actually working in different companies. So I started living alone since I was 18. So in order to afford living alone in Moscow and pay my rent and so, I had to work in some corporate boring jobs. So I will usually go to work at 8, come back at around 6 or 7, and after I will have 3 or 4 hours working on my startup.
Oh, wow.
So that was, yeah, going on and off for almost, I would say, 5 or 6 years.
Is this the site? This was YouReserve?
Yeah, that was at that time, but okay. I can see that now it's a different one.
Yeah, now it's, like I said here, I might as well bring it up. Talking about it, and since I finally have the ability to show websites in real time, there it is.
Yeah.
Cool. How does it feel to see the old website right now? Usually when I show people their old site, they get excited, but it feels like you're not that enthusiastic.
It's just like, oh my God, that does not look good.
I thought I was sensing something.
Yeah.
Okay. So now what you've got is an idea. You found your first partner who's sending you data. You've got a model that seems to make sense. It's time for you to start getting some real users. How do you get your first users?
Yeah, well, I just basically first what I did, I tried to find everyone connected to online shops in my network or everyone who will be able to grab a coffee with me and answer my stupid questions about how e-commerce works. So I interviewed around 20 or 30 shops in total. And actually the first shops we've got on board, they were one of those first, you know, people who actually said, yeah, sure, let's grab a coffee and I will tell you what I know. So I think that was really good because when I was coming to them, I was not coming after their money, but I was coming to get their advice. And I think people usually appreciate that and they actually even tell you much more, you know, than you expect to hear. So the idea we came up with, it was late October 2013. And in December, we signed up the first letter of intent from one shop. So after that, we were supposed to spend like a month or two to actually finishing the prototype. But I had some issues with my team at that point. So 3 months later, I was alone without prototype and sort of again back on the
Your
place
team
I was
left you?
To. No, it was kind of half of it was yes, they've decided to leave because they didn't really see any potential in the idea, and because of some personal reasons they want to go back to Moscow, because some of my developers they were from Moscow at that time, and with some people in the team we kind of did not share the same vision of how the company should be developing. Mm-hmm. So it was easier for me to sort of like say, okay, let's start over and let's see what we can do. So in March 2014, that was the time when we actually finished the first prototype. So I gathered the live data from one of our partners, a shop which wanted to try out Easy Size. I've got their historical data, and I just decided to run the algorithm to see how the results will be. And yeah, it was quite good because even the first prototype showed quite a good and high accuracy rate. That was around 75%. Which for the first prototype and then quite limited data was quite good. So after that, I again spent some time trying to fix it. And in May, I actually hired my first employee at that time. So for a long time, that was only me and him. Mm-hmm. But that was quite interesting because we were able to really dig deeper into the algorithm and the database we were gathering. And we ended up to having a pilot test with one of the largest companies in the UK. So it's actually called so-called fashion unicorn, Farfetch. Farfetch.
Okay.
They've been valued at around 1 billion recently, like half a year ago. So.
Partridge?
No, Farfetch is Farfetch.
Oh, Farfetch.
Yeah, Farfetch.
Okay, UK. Let's see them. How did you get Farfetch to sign up with you? This seems like their site.
That's their website. So they're actually quite a big deal in Europe. So usually everyone in fashion world and even like in e-commerce world knows about them. Mm-hmm. I had one guy whom I knew, whom I met from a conference, and I saw that he's connected to the CEO of the company. So I just sent him an email saying, like, hey, Adara, I would really like you to give me an intro to this guy. Is it possible? Do you think you can do that? Mm-hmm. So he sent an introduction email, and the CEO of the company referred me to the VP of technology, David. And David, he's just an amazing guy. So we spent an hour, I think, if not more, just talking about technology and how we can work together and so on. And he said, well, let's try it out. Let's see what we can do together. So that was really fun. And I think I was really lucky to actually, get introduced to these cool people who've been through entrepreneurship and who started the company a few years ago. And it was just, a small business. So they knew probably what I'm going through, and that was helpful.
But they must really need the product in order to take a risk on a new entrepreneur, right? I know one of your problems is, or one of your challenges is that as a new entrepreneur selling to businesses, you're dealing with customers who aren't eager to try the latest thing, not like consumers who always want to try everything that's new because what do they have to lose? Businesses want to know that you've had some track record, that you're going to be around, know that other people made mistakes with you. What's the problem that, how do you explain the problem to them in a way that makes them say, fine, we'll try this thing because we're so desperate to do anything to solve our problem?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. That's the problem we usually face when we do B2B sales, as we are still a young company. So what we really try to do first, of course, we try to show all the benefits and all the track records we already have, saying like, okay, this is how much you'll be saying, like, do you want to save $5 million next year? Like, do you want to increase your sales by 42%? Or, using all those numbers we have already gotten. If it doesn't work, after that, we will try to say, like, okay, let's integrate on some limited number of products and let's see how it works. Like, for example, you don't need to integrate it across all the 3,000 brands you carry. Let's just pick one brand and 100 dresses. Just let's integrate there. No risk for you, no hassle, and see how it works. If it doesn't work, then we just try to sort of like convince them and do some demos and go through all the layers. That sometimes might be an issue because for us it's really important to, from the beginning, find the right decision maker, but it doesn't happen all the time. So sometimes it takes a little bit of time.
All right, let me talk about my second sponsor, and they are, TopCal. I want to bring them up on the web. Here's what you see when you go to TopCal directly. Let me bring them up. This is TopCal's website. You can see that they're used by Airbnb, IDEO, Zendesk, companies that you know and respect. Here's what you see when you go to toptal.com/Mixergy. First of all, you see my face. I like that they were able to create a site that's so personalized for our audience. But notice here, Mixergy listeners will get 80 free TopCal developer hours when they pay for 80, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. So they're clearly giving more to our audience than they're giving other people. So what is TopCal and why should you care about that? We know when you need a new developer fast or a set of developers fast to either round out your team because your team is just taken on more than they can handle, or maybe you have a new project that you want one person who's going to get to work on it. Maybe you don't even need a full-time person, just part-time. Well, all those needs mean that you have to go out and look for a headhunter or look online for the right developer. It means you have to start screening people. It means you have to deal with people who may or may not be the right fit, who may or may not be there the next day. If it's just part-time, especially, you're going to have a hard time getting a hold of someone who will really be there. Well, there's an alternative to the way you've been hiring people, and that's to go to TopCal. TopCal gives you the top developers chosen by their peers. They really have an insane process for finding the right people to work for them. You tell them what you're looking for. You tell them how your team works. You tell them what software you're using. You tell them everything you need. And they go out and they start hunting through their network to find the right person for you. And when they do, they introduce them to you. And if you're happy with them, you can get started often within a day or two. That's the way we were able to do it at Mixergy. So you get your developer, you're up and running with them, and you know that you can count on them because they're with TopCal. They're part of the TopCal network. You've got a real representative there who can make sure that they're there, that you guys are working well together, that if you have any issues, like maybe the person's not doing the work you want and you need somebody else, or maybe you want more people, you've got your representative at TopCal who will help you do that. In fact, they have such a personal connection that they ask me, would I introduce my audience to them if you want? So yeah, I will. If you'd rather not go to this site, and I don't know why you wouldn't. Look at that pretty face over there. Look at that. If you'd rather, I always smile with my mouth closed, never showing teeth. I don't know why. But if you'd rather not come over to this page and sign up, just email me, Andrew@Mixergy. Andrew, here, let me show you my face. Andrew@Mixergy.com. Andrew@Mixergy.com. And I'll introduce you to my guy over at TopTal, and they will set you up with the right developer. I promise. They are fantastic. I've worked with them, and so many other entrepreneurs have, and so many other big businesses have too. And you'll really be happy if you go to toptal.com/Mixergy, and your friends will be too if you let them in on this super secret webpage, toptal.com/Mixergy. Cool. Do you want to write that down for yourself? You might need them.
Yeah, I have already noted that. That actually sounds like a really, really great idea.
It really is. They're such a good company. Andreessen Horowitz invested in them.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, it's definitely a need there. And I sometimes feel it in our team as well, even though now we are 8 people and we actually have developers in-house. But sometimes, you know, like it just happens, like everything which could go wrong or could go well, it will happen in 1 week. And now you suddenly realize that you just don't have hands to do that.
Right, right. And that's exactly where they're good. Sorry, I'm pouring myself water. Like if you suddenly need a developer, you don't want to hire them and you don't even need them in the office. They could connect from wherever they are and work with you. All right. It's impressive that you're able to get all these customers. Does it help or hurt that you are, I guess, outside of their country? You're no longer in Moscow. You moved to Copenhagen, right?
Yeah.
Does it help that you're not in the UK when you're selling a UK company? Does it hurt or help when you're not able to see them in person and be in their area code?
Yeah, well, I would say that in Europe, it's been working quite well for us so far. So we usually don't even need to take meetings with people and we can do everything through Skype. But we've noticed that because we've been trying to run some tests to see how we can expand to the US market, because of course, that's obviously one of the biggest markets out there. In the US, it just doesn't work that way. So for instance, we had a customer we've been emailing 3 months back and forth, had a couple of Skype calls, and like we couldn't really realize whether they were ready to do that or not. And last week, I just met them in the US when I was there, and they were like, yeah, sure, why not? You guys are cool. Let's try that. It's like, what was the problem? Why couldn't you do it through email? So we do see that, of course, every local market has its own mentality, and there are some rules you have to follow. So we know that, okay, in order to expand to France and Germany, we have to have native speakers on board. In order to use, like go to the UK, we actually need to have some UK case studies. That works much better with them. And we need to spend some time, you know, traveling and meeting with the customers. Well, in Scandinavia, it's quite, I would say, liberal. So we can do everything through email and Skype calls. And for them, it's okay that we actually speak English mainly. And yeah, that we won't have a lot of problems.
One of my favorite examples of the problem of working internationally is what happened when you moved to Germany and your language just didn't fit right with the way people speak. Do you remember what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we've launched with our first customer in the German market. And we, of course, do have all the numbers, how people use our tool and what the conversions are and so on. And we started analyzing the data right after we launched, and we see that it's twice lower than we usually have. Mm-hmm. And it was really weird for us, like that never happened before. So we started testing it and changing the interface. Nothing's improving. And after that, we got a couple of native speakers in our office, and we said, "Hey guys, could you please try it out and tell us, like, maybe there's something wrong with that?" And after trying, they asked us, "Why are you so formal?" It's like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Why everything is so formal in your tool? Why are you asking? Tell me, please, madame, tell me about your size," and so on. Why is not like, "Hey, can you tell me your size?" And so what turned out to be that the translator who was translating that, he translated everything in a formal way. Whether in German, you can actually translate also in an informal way. So we got this formal translation, and we were integrated with, you know, this millennials website where everyone is super young and like teenagers and so on. And of course, they would just be freaking out when they see that. So yeah, that was one of the examples we got.
Let me see if I could show your site just to get a sense of how it works. But I'm actually enjoying using YouTube Live. Let's see, so we click live demo, right? Let me move the video over. It's this right here, this button that says find my size. You're two clicks away. Yeah. That's what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
So if I click that,
yeah,
and it says, I'm looking for a dress. Why don't I do dress shirt? The brand is Esprit. I only wear Esprit. I am large. I think that's it, right? And then I do find my size. Yeah, and so what you then, sorry?
Yeah, that's it. You basically can, you just already see the size on the screen. Mm-hmm. You can just click select the size and that's it.
I see. So what it's saying is if you're large, when you buy Esprit dress shirts, then only for this, for these short dresses, should you be buying a large.
Yeah, that's right. What we try to do here, we really try to minimize all the steps a customer needs to take. So it's just two simple questions. Tell us about something that you like and you like that fits you perfectly. And of course, here like customers will be usually adding like their favorite dress or their favorite T-shirt and so. And that's what we use as a reference mm-hmm. to analyze the entire database we have and find all the customers who have similar patterns to you.
I see. And you can even do that for a dress if I give you a shirt size.
Well, in some cases, yes. Yeah. In some cases, yes, definitely. And also the interface you see, it's our basic interface. And the beauty about it that it's so easily customizable. So with each retailer we integrate, we will be using their colors and their fonts. So it looks alike and it looks like the website where a customer is already. Because we, our main goal here is to not freak out a customer and not to confuse them, but actually to provide an integrated shopping experience. So everything goes smooth and fast.
And every time somebody buys, whether or not they're even using your tool, you get data on how happy they were with their size that goes back and informs your software and makes your software better.
Yeah, exactly. So we use a machine learning algorithm. So now we are able not only see their in general patterns, like the way how customers use it, but also personalized one. Because now we are able to recognize the same customer across different shops. It means that we collect your personal history and we create the sizing profile for you. So we know how you buy clothes. And we know, for example, that you like fitting T-shirts, but oversized sweaters, and we show the different sizes accordingly.
How many users do you have now in your system that are improving your database?
Well, we have a weekly growth of about 20%. So every week we have 20% more users using us. And on average, I think we have around 5,000 or 7,000 users using us every week. So, it's
and
getting...
Total?
Yeah. Well, in total, it's hard to say because some of the users, they're returning once and they buy again. But the database, the entire database we handle now, it's 500,000 unique users. Mm-hmm. It gives us a coverage around 10 to 15% of our local domestic market, Denmark. So meaning that 15% of online shoppers in Denmark are in our system. So when they go online in an online shop where we're integrated, we instantly are able to provide their right size. So that's what we've been trying to do, get more personalized data so we're able to see those little tiny patterns in shopping experience, in shopping behavior every customer has.
Do you know how many sales you're helping to make, how many sales or how many refunds you're avoiding because of your software?
Yeah, well, we see that with our solution, online shops are able to decrease their returns by 35% on average. So it usually saves them around 5 to 7% of their revenue because, of course, returns, they lead to a lot of cost in online shops.
Their revenue. Wow.
Sorry?
So 5 to 7% of their revenue,
yeah, exactly, them? Exactly, yeah. What is more interesting that that's something that we didn't see coming at all. So we've noticed that by providing the right size, we're able to ensure customers and they're buying much more often.
Especially so what kind of revenue are you guys doing?
Yeah. Well, that's something that we don't disclose yet.
Come on, give me a ballpark. Yeah. Are you doing over $1 million in sales yet?
No, we are not there yet.
No.
But the reason why we are not disclosing is because we are planning to close our Series A round next year. And mm-hmm. we are basically now getting all the metrics straight. And that's the reason why we for now decided to not disclose it. But of course, we will start doing that and be more transparent about it once we raise the Series A.
Okay. Can you say over $250,000?
I cannot say that.
Can't say that either.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. let me finish off by saying this, that I know I have a lot of people in my audience who are running business-to-business companies. Let's give them some advice based on your experience for how to sell to other businesses. One thing you said is in the U.S., people want to meet you in person, right?
Yes.
Okay. And what else?
It's also important if you want to run sales in the U.S., it's really important to be present there. So mm-hmm. you have to appear as an American company. Mm-hmm. Whether if you want to do it in Europe, it's not that important, to be honest. I think it might even work for you better. If you say that, hey, we're an American company and we want to do business with you, a French-based company or whatever, like a Germany-based company and so on. I think that one of the main advice I've got at some point when I started my company, it was try to be not a seller but a doctor, meaning that when you go to a customer, try to understand their pain and not just push the sales but actually try to solve their issue. It really helps at the stage where you're just developing your product, really to talk to customers and figure out what actually like they're struggling with. And after that, you will be able to really tailor your product and provide something that they will be able to buy.
Can you give me also an example of how you did that one time that you walked in to see a client and you were acting not like a salesperson, but a doctor. And because of that, you got your sale.
Yeah, well, that's basically what I usually do even now. So I will never start my meeting with actually saying what EasySaaS does. What I will usually start from is saying like, hey, can you tell me a little bit more about the processes you have? How customers find your shop, what they usually do, and so on. After that, I will slowly move to returns to understand what sort of returns they usually face. And, you know, is it because of the size or any other problems? And if I say that, okay, they actually do have a lot of returns because of the size, I will slowly move and say like, okay, we have this product. Is that something that you will be interested in? Because I do realize that even though the e-commerce market is huge, there are certain type of customers for whom our product probably won't be the perfect one. And I'm okay with admitting that. And I will sometimes even say like, hey, I think our product is not the best one. Maybe you should take a look to a couple of our competitors. Maybe they will be more useful for you. I think it's really important to be honest with customers and they do appreciate that. And that also leads me to the final advice. It's probably like also quite important one. Don't try just to make a short-term sale and leave. Build a relationship. Especially in if you're doing B2B sales, when your customers are paying you over like $150 a month or so, it's quite important to build those relationships so you're able to know who they are and to be able to fulfill their needs in the long term. That's what you're really looking for.
What about how you get through to a customer when you're doing B2B sales? How do you get through to them, especially if you're not in the same country?
Well, LinkedIn helps a lot. Especially if you're doing sales in Europe and the US, because usually people have their profiles there. So now in EasySaaS, we already know who our decision maker is. So it usually will be an e-commerce manager on the website. So we will try to find that person. We'll try to find someone who can introduce us to them or just shoot them an email. To like, frankly honest, something that I've noticed for myself personally, if I need to reach out to a CEO of the company, and it's the company is, you know, a startup or a former startup or a small company-ish, I will usually write this, you know, I'm writing to you, my fellow entrepreneur, email or a message saying like, hey, I'm also an entrepreneur. We're a small team. I'd really love to have a chat with you and just to get more about more about your company. And I think that works quite well because people in general, they're quite okay to, you know, share their experience and have a call or a chat with you and try to help you. So you just need to ask and then ask the right person.
See, you already got, who is it Leva Smekate?
Yeah, well, we have a communications, you mean our communications manager?
Yes. Is that her name? Is it or his name, Leva?
No, it's actually Yeva. It's Yeva. In the beginning, yeah.
Oh, I see. So we had a typo in it. So Yeva. So you have a communications person already, even with such a small team. Why?
Yes. Well, I guess my background in marketing was, you know, pushing me to sort of like think about marketing and the right message we're putting out there from the beginning. And we really needed someone to build this right understanding of what the company is and what our goals and visions are and so on. So that's the reason like Yeva joined us almost a year ago, and she's been actually with the company from almost beginning. And I think that's been really helpful because we're able to communicate the right message to the market.
How? Like, so actually now that I've got her name spelled right, I can see her on LinkedIn. PR, social media marketing, website content, strategic communication. It's Yeva who introduced us to you. What's something that you guys have been able to do because you've got a communications manager this early on in your career?
Well, I guess, first of all, we've been able to get some attention from media. I believe that PR and marketing, it's all about hard work. And sometimes you have a really great story to tell. So we've been building a lot of relationship with the journalists and try to understand what sort of story we need to put out there. We've been trying to reach out to all the conferences and some maybe awards and so on and try to apply everywhere. That's what we've noticed with the B2B market. The more you're endorsed by the conferences, the more you get attention from online shops. Like we, for instance, have this... Yeah, we have one funny story. So there was one shop, and they've been on my radar for like a year or a year and a half. So I've been trying to reach out to the right person for a long time. But the company was going through a lot of changes, and they actually even changed a CEO of the company 3 times over 1 year. And I was already like, you know, I was giving up. So one day we've gotten an email saying, hey guys, I would like to have a chat with you. And I saw that was the marketing director of that company. What happened a week before, we got an award as the best newcomer of the year in the Nordics, in the e-commerce. This guy, he saw us in the conference and he really liked that. He reached out to me, we had a call, and this is how we got that customer. As well as now, for example, we've got Stevie Awards, International Business Awards, as the best startup, as one of the best startups. It also helped us to get some, interest from and attention from media.
I see. And so that's how you ended up. And I'm looking here again at my notes in our CRM. I see Nordic E-Commerce Summit, winner of the Newcomer Award. First place winner, Beta Pitch, 2014 in Copenhagen. I see Investor Demo Day, Copenhagen, 2014. I see Investment Lab in Egypt, 2015. I see, where is that? Top 7 interesting startups for Russian female founders by Forbes from Russia. I see top 16 most successful women in Russian venture industry. I see successful Russian female entrepreneurs by Google Russia. So all this stuff helps you as a new entrepreneur selling to businesses because it gives them more trust, more ability to trust you and more confidence in you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what I could recommend also all the young startups to try to do, reach out and try to get that attention from media, especially in fashion e-commerce. That's a really weird vertical. Everyone is looking for someone who's endorsed by someone. So that definitely helps.
I see. And so you just have a full-time person who applies to all these conferences, who helps them understand what you do. And the more you apply, the more likely you are to win.
Well, of course, it's not her full job. It's a part of her job. Also, she does all the social media communications, all the press releases and meetings with journalists and arranging the meetings and so on.
I see. Yeah, when I was living in Washington, D.C., I'd see these entrepreneurs come to town and they'd have dinner with me because they were in town. And I'd ask them, why are you here? And often it's for some White House event. So you got to speak at the White House? One person said, it's actually not that hard. Just had a virtual assistant apply for anything. Anything that was an event that was going on, any interview that was going on, any top 20 this under top 20 that list, you know, and eventually they just start getting hits on them and they end up speaking at the White House, end up getting all kinds of press. So I see the value of that. And now I understand who contacted us and why and how it fits in. And that's a really good business-to-business strategy, and I'm glad that I asked about it. All right. The website is easysize.me, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What do you think about what Paul Graham said about how entrepreneurs should get the .com? Do you agree?
Yeah, I really agree with that. I couldn't agree more.
Do you get easysize.com soon? Let me see if that's available. Maybe I'll buy it, and I'll make a killing by selling it to you.
Well, it's actually not available, and we are now in talks with people who own the domain because they don't really use that. But yeah. They just like how it sounds. So we're talking to them. In the beginning, the reason why I actually registered with EasyStars.me, because I thought that it will be quite cool at some point to make it, you know, similar thing like, oh, just Google it, just EasyStars it, you know, so EasyStars me. So make it as a verb. But yeah, for now it's just the website and the domain we have, but we might change it soon.
To a different name or a different domain?
We're considering both options.
Okay.
Probably easier will be the domain, but who knows?
Yeah, they're not doing anything on it. Yeah. They're just cyber squatting for a while. Actually, yeah, I don't know if it's cyber squatting. Maybe they have something in mind. All right, easysize.me. And I'm going to go and see how this worked out. Maybe what we need to do is start using YouTube Hangouts or YouTube Live. Yeah, you know what? I am using YouTube Live, and now I see Google Hangouts at the top anyway. So whatever their product is, actually, it's really good. I stopped clicking your face when I needed to show you and my face when I needed to show me and just trusted the system, and they really improved their camera work. They really know when to show you and when to show me, and that's impressive that they keep improving the software.
Yeah, and I think it's a great alternative to Skype.
Yeah.
So
it's sometimes it helps, actually, to see that a site is down.
That's true.
All right, cool. Thank you so much for doing this interview. If you like this interview, please sign up to Mixergy, whatever podcast program you like. You know, there's another app that I used to hate and rail against here, which is the podcast player that's built into our iPhones. Actually, they've improved that too. And it's not as good as Downcast or Overcast and other software out there. But what's nice about it is it's built in, which means you can use Siri. So if you subscribe to Mixergy on the podcast player that comes with your iPhone, you can say, "Hey Siri, play Mixergy podcast." I should actually try that and see if it understands Mixergy. We'll see. But it will start doing it. And even if it doesn't do it for Mixergy, it'll do it for others. So check it out if you haven't. Maybe like me, you'll become converted to Apple's built-in software. But whatever app you use to listen to podcasts, please sign up to Mixergy. And my sponsors are toptal.com and hostgator.com. Thanks. Bye, everyone.